My guest at this time is Matthew Staver. He's the founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. We want to get his thoughts on the legacy of retiring U.S. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy and what he'll be most remembered for. And we'll ask him what he wants to see in the next Supreme Court Justice. And Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, just about everybody knows now that Justice Kennedy will be retiring effective July 31st. And since earlier this week was the end of the current session, that pretty much means he's done on the court, barring some sort of emergency. The next session starts in the beginning of October. As the announcement was made yesterday, a couple of prominent Republicans heaped quite a bit of praise on the exiting justice, starting with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
First and foremost, I want to pause and express our gratitude for the extraordinary service that Justice Kennedy has offered our nation. He served on the federal bench for 43 years. In particular, we owe him a debt of thanks for his ardent defense of the First Amendment and the First Amendment's right to political speech.
Referring to the Citizens United case, most likely in that statement, also President Trump.
He is a man that I've known for a long time and a man that I've respected for a long time. He's been a great justice of the Supreme Court. He is a man who is displaying great vision. He's displayed tremendous vision and tremendous heart.
So, Matt, with all that praise being lavished on him, I guess maybe some comments are nicer when people are deceased or departing, which is the case for Kennedy here. But the track record, to be honest, is a lot more complicated than that. On one hand, he wrote a blistering dissent in the case that saved Obamacare and recently sided with Jack Phillips in the Masterpiece case and the crisis pregnancy centers against the state of California. But of course, he's also been front and center in the decision that established gay marriage in this country and several cases leading up to it. And he also switched his vote to save Roe v. Wade in the 1992 Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision. So what do you see as Kennedy's legacy?
Well, it's certainly mixed, but I have a particular view of Kennedy's legacy. Certainly he was on the right side of many cases, and even the most recent cases that came out of the U.S. Supreme Court. He was a fifth vote in that particular case or cases and made a huge difference. But on the other hand, I'm going to remember Justice Kennedy for some of the real horrible decisions that he ultimately inflicted because they have caused significant harm and even death. And that goes all the way back to 1992. When he was on the court after the oral argument, he was part of the five individual justices that voted to overturn Roe versus Wade, the 1973 abortion decision. And for 30 days, Rehnquist was writing the majority opinion. Kennedy was right there with him, but he succumbed to lobbying pressure from Justices O'Connor and Souter. And after 30 days, he changed his mind. He went to Justice Blackmun on the U.S. Supreme Court, who wrote the 1973 abortion decision and who is still on the court, and he changed his mind. He flipped from the five in the majority to overrule the abortion case to flipping it, and the minority became the majority. Five individuals ultimately voted to uphold the abortion decisions, albeit somewhat modified. And then he and O'Connor and Souter jointly wrote the plurality opinion in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So the babies that have lost their lives since 1992, you can go to Justice Kennedy because he is the reason for that. He is the reason for the people who have lost their lives and all the families that have been broken. You also have Justice Kennedy in 2000. He was in the majority to strike down a law that bans the brutal procedure known as partial birth abortion. Then he flipped his vote, and in 2007, he was in the majority that upheld a virtually identical law. And who will ever forget his decisions in the LGBT agenda? He has been the leading advocate on the U.S. Supreme Court from the beginning. And most recently, 2 years ago, in June of 2015, he authored a horrible decision that has no basis in the Constitution, no basis in the court's precedent. It's just an imposition of his will in which he overturned marriage laws that understood the natural definition and order of marriage being between two people of opposite sex. And so he ultimately struck it down and ushered in so-called same-sex marriage. So those decisions between the LGBT agenda culminating in the marriage decision and even most particularly the abortion decisions, that really is the legacy of Justice Kennedy. And if you think that that's a little bit of an extreme, well, if you go to Justice Kennedy's preferred reading list from the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit because he was from that area and he has a reading list. One of the reading lists that he requires or suggests is good reading for people at the highest level of the Constitution and even the Declaration of Independence and other historical documents of law is a case that he authored with regards to same-sex sodomy. It's unbelievable that he would elevate that case to the same level as the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. This was somebody who did decisions right on occasion and made some horrible decisions on other occasions. And the reason is he didn't follow the constitutional text. He allowed his abortion and LGBT ideology to ultimately color the Constitution, and he imposed his own will in those decisions, and they have caused and will continue to cause horrible harm until those decisions are reversed.
We're talking with Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel, and of course, Matt, Anthony Kennedy got on the Supreme Court because of the contentious hearings over Robert Bork in 1987. Ultimately, he was voted down in the U.S. Senate, controlled then by Democrats. Then there was another judge who the president at that time, Ronald Reagan, nominated, who was scuttled for at one time smoking marijuana, and Anthony Kennedy was the third choice. But that Bork hearing was really the first kind of nuclear fight between the left and the right over a Supreme Court justice. And now, 30 years later, we're seeing it over the very same seat. What do you expect this summer?
What a big difference the decisions would have been if Robert Bork was confirmed instead of Kennedy to the U.S. Supreme Court. Unfortunately, back then, when Reagan nominated him, he was a great justice. But some people didn't go to the mat, and the Democrats did go to the mat, and they were really outrageous in their opposition to Bork, and it was over the issue of abortion. Because of his originalism, he would not have supported abortion, and if you would have had Bork on the stand, on the bench, in 1992, we wouldn't have abortion from 1992 to the present. You wouldn't have same-sex marriage from 2015 to the present, and so many other things would be incredibly different because of that individual who could have been the person there. And what you ultimately had is Kennedy being the third choice. Kennedy was someone that they thought they could trust, but you know the problem that you have is you need to understand a person's real judicial philosophy, what anchors them, and that was clearly not known in Kennedy's situation, and Kennedy became the swing vote and became the pivotal vote in these incredibly harmful decisions.
And a lot of folks would say the same was true of David Souter, a George H.W. Bush appointee a couple of years after that. In terms of the likely replacement here, we at least know the group that it's going to be chosen from here because the president has this list of 25 people. I'm sure you've gone over that more closely than most people. Most of it is the same list that he used to eventually choose Neil Gorsuch from last year. As you go over the list, is there anybody that you really don't want on, or are you mostly fine with whoever the president chooses from there?
No, I'm not mostly fine with whoever the president chooses. Each one of these have to be individually vetted. It's a generally good list, but not everybody is at the same level of Gorsuch that he did nominate. And Gorsuch is an excellent judge and a justice. We need to have another person just like that who has that commitment to the rule of law and the Constitution, to originalism and the text of the Constitution in text. And there are some people that are in that list that do not have that. In fact, one of those is Pryor. Pryor's on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. He had some bad decisions with regards to the LGBT agenda where he really, I think, injected an activist viewpoint on his particular decision and his casting of a vote. I don't think someone who does that it deserves to be on the United States Supreme Court. Look, we have too many important things coming down the pipe. We have abortion. We have the opportunity to put someone on the U.S. Supreme Court that will adhere to the Constitution and the original text and understanding of that document. And if they do, abortion will become history. We will stop the bloodshed of innocent children. We need to make sure we have the right person that has that judicial philosophy. Same-sex marriage, the LGBT agenda, the clash between the LGBT agenda and religious freedom and free speech, all these different things, plus more, the Second Amendment, so many other things. Our various basic freedoms are on the line. We cannot play politics or favoritism with this next nominee. It needs to be somebody along the lines of a Gorsuch who is committed, who has a long track record in their writings, that has a solid judicial philosophy consistent with the Constitution.
Do you have any favorites on the list?
Well, I won't indicate who's the favorite. There are several that are definitely high on the list, and there's some that I have some concerns about. So we're going to continue to make those opinions and the research known to those that will be making these decisions.
Matt, as I'm sure you've seen, there's plenty of people on the left who see this potentially as apocalyptic for their political agenda. And we've gotten to the point now where basically whether or not you agree with a political agenda is whether or not they make a good Supreme Court justice. Hillary Clinton in 2016 pretty much said that flat out in one of the debates. You've got to be pro-choice. You've got to be in favor of Obamacare. And she listed a number of other things there. Minimum wage, maybe. I don't even remember exactly what her whole list was. But what does it tell you that we're at this point now where whether somebody's a good judge is dependent upon their political perspectives?
Well, it shouldn't depend on their political perspective at all. They could have one political perspective or another. They have different personal views. What really is important is whether they're going to interpret the Constitution. I think the issue of abortion, I think, is a litmus test, because how you approach that, if you say that the Constitution supports the right to abortion or, frankly, the right to kill an unborn innocent child, then it says a lot about your judicial philosophy. It says that you're not reading the Constitution for what it is. You're injecting into the Constitution your own personal views. So but on the other hand, just because you say it doesn't support abortion doesn't mean that you've got the right view. It's not coming to the right decision or not. Clearly, if you come to the decision that the Constitution supports abortion, your judicial philosophy is way off course. You could come to the view that the Constitution doesn't, and we still have to find out a little bit more about, well, how is it going to affect other decisions? Are you going to be someone to look at the original text and understanding of the Constitution? If you are, then you'll come down on the right side on these issues. You're not going to impose same-sex marriage. You're not going to have abortion on demand or abortion at all. You're not going to have the court upholding Obamacare. That's just far beyond the purview of the Constitution.
Matt, a lot to get into this summer. I'm sure we'll be talking again. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Matthew Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.